Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe. There is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 741, Guardians of the Galaxy Vol. 3.
That's right.
Yeah. So
that's right.
It's what it says on the poster.
That's what it says, yeah. So I guess before I forget, as I am apt to do, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
Oh, this is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Before we dig in, because there's a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about.
Shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us while you're there. Maybe follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review.
Ooh.
That's always helpful.
And somebody did.
Oh, how about that?
How about that? This is a 5-star review coming from...
That's why we're reading it.
That's, well, we'll read the bad ones, too. I think we've done that before.
We just...
Oh, who would leave us anything less than a 5-star review?
Somebody who didn't like our review of Rambo.
It's not a challenge.
Yeah.
Shung-a-dong. So hopefully I said that right.
Okay.
5 stars. I came across this podcast when I was only 15 years old.
Oh, geez.
And only had... I know,
78 now.
Just wait. And had a mild interest in film. I am 22 now and just graduated from college with a degree in screenwriting. Horn tooted. That's in the review. I didn't add that.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, good for him.
That's awesome. I weirdly owe a lot to these guys. I grew up listening to them and this podcast every week. And I just wanted to say thank you. This podcast made me discover my passion. That's fantastic.
Cool.
That is very awesome. That is very cool. So congratulations on your degree.
And we hope that you write a big hit movie and put us in it.
Oh, man. Can't wait.
But could you imagine the Oscars if he writes a movie and goes to the Oscars, or if they write a
movie?
I'm
sure we're at the top of the list.
Yeah,
if
right,
we get
right.
thanked in the
it's gonna
Oscar
be, it's
acceptance
be,
speech.
It's going to be God or whatever denomination you believe in. Mom.
Yeah.
Real spoilers.
Real spoilers.
That's right.
Yeah. Or if they had kind of a bad relationship with them.
I guess that's true.
Then, and if they're an atheist.
Then
it's just moving up the seniority list, baby.
All we need for our moment is for him to have a mother like my ex-wife.
Correct. Yes.
And not believe in God. Or at least be agnostic.
Yeah.
How old is Brian?
He's 18.
Not in a committed relationship. Because if they're under, I think my wife, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Really? Over real spoilers?
Yeah. You make a good point.
I mean, where was the wife when you were 15?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know who was there? Real spoilers.
And your right hand.
Or your
left hand.
Or both.
Oh, ambidextrous.
Mm-hmm. Feels like somebody else is doing it.
It's the bisexuality of masturbation.
That's right. It's called the stranger.
You're also presuming that Shung-a-dong is a male.
Also true.
They never... I mean...
You know what? You make a good point. Yeah. I guess you could still do it both hands.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No, I've seen it. It's fun.
Wow. We want to keep the listeners.
The fact that it was just like, no, I've seen it.
It's
absolutely a thing.
It's a blast. I highly recommend it.
They graduate from college. They don't have to graduate from listening to this show. You can keep listening.
That's true.
We don't need to.
Granted, our humor, there's going to come a point where they're like, you know what? Yeah. It's ran its course.
Yeah. He's like, it was nice until I left a review. Yeah.
And then, so if you would like your review read on the air.
Yes.
Yeah, feel free.
Why wouldn't you after listening to all that? Yeah. So where was I? Oh, shameless plugs. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group is called the League of Show Sharers. We're hoping you'll share an episode. I forgot last week because we were traveling.
You get a break.
We mean my wife and I, not the show collectively. Yeah.
They saw us. We don't have any travel budget.
No. My wife does.
Yeah. When we get that Oscar mention.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
then our listenership will be in the tens.
Could you imagine? They say, and I'd like to thank Real Spoilers, and the whole place just goes completely crickets.
Or it goes bananas.
Yeah. Oh.
Because everybody's listening to Real Spoilers. Oh. They've been around for 50 years by then.
I love Joe's optimism.
Everyone's clapping, and then they cut to Vin Diesel just sitting there in silence because of all your Paul Walker
wearing
jokes.
A Paul Walker t-shirt. Oh. Yeah, right.
He's like, I refuse to support that podcast.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. League of Show Sharers. So there's a lot of them because I didn't do it last week. So here's a whole bunch of people. So Librarian Cynthia, Glenn Cougar, Mellon Brewer, Julianne Jordan, Lane LeVanway, Ralph Tribble, Travis Tewitt, Jason Weese, Phil Timon, Chris Magic Man, Tammy Lynn Powers, Betts, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Falls, Brent Smith, Heather Sachs, Christopher Rex, Dissect That Film, David Rojas, Spoiler Piece Theater, Invasion of the Remake, Ants, Humans, Stars podcast.
I love it.
Yeah. Where were they for our Ant-Man review?
That's true. That's a great movie.
Or every other movie we've done because they have humans in them.
Also good point.
Feel and Film, Colby Mack, Mike and Oscar, Ronnie Castle, In Session Film, Geek to Me Radio, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd podcast, Binge Movies, Nostalgia Cast, Dan and Nancy Tweet the Movies, Hallmarkies podcast.
Oh boy.
And Megan Kern. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate
it. So good. Thank you so much.
And finally, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and we like you extra.
Yeah, and we a couple scheduling snafus, but I think this Friday we're doing The Incredible Hulk.
We'll see.
Not the Hulk.
We'll see if Joe decides to get up this Friday.
I was awake. I just had kids. Like, I was, you know.
Well, we all have kids.
Yeah, but my wife was in Mexico. And
so
I was
when
so
Joe has does his Oscar speech, guess who's going to come first?
I guess the kids. Before we get started.
Okay.
There has been a little bit of breaking news in the world of DC that is important to the city that we live in.
Oh.
So who's in charge of DC Films?
James Gunn. Him and another guy that I can never remember the name of.
Peter Safran. Safran. Right? James Gunn is from?
St. Louis.
Who's in charge of DC Comics right now? Who was named the publisher and president of DC Comics? Jim Lee.
Oh, Jim Lee from St. Louis.
So St. Louis
St. Louis.
Is running DC Comics across the board right now. So
did he just get named
the
publisher?
Yeah, it was like this past week.
Because he was, what was he, the co...
Like creative consultant or something?
Okay, but he's the...
He is the president and publisher of DC Comics.
Wow.
From Samurai Santa.
The career of that guy is bonkers best possible way.
That's his first professional art work is on a comic book called Samurai Santa.
Yeah, his first Marvel work is Alpha
Flight.
Not
even color, right? It's black and white?
I think it's black and white, but he did Alpha Flight. He did like Punisher War Journal and then Wolverine and obviously the X-Men. He's a superstar, and now he's in charge of the entire line. Which is kind of crazy. So.
Thank goodness he's in charge of the movies. They'd come out one every 25 years.
It's interesting because he was always more of a Marvel guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he jumped to DC when he did, I think he did some like Batman.
Yeah,
Black
he did some Batman stuff, I think.
And Superman.
But he became a DC guy when he did that Jeff Loeb.
Yeah.
When he did Hush. And then he was a DC guy kind of there on.
Yeah.
He did that Superman book that was not that great. And now he's in charge now. But St. Louis boys. Running the show.
Look at that.
Running the show.
Yeah. Going to have a lot more St. Charles Post newspapers and all the comics and the movies.
That was great. It was so fantastic.
Anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in.
You know, it's been a long, weird journey post-Endgame.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were going to say it started with saying this will be Marvel's first
failure. I know.
10 years
and now
ago.
Here we are with our volume 3. And it's funny because this is volume 3, but I feel like this property has gotten the most play, like, outside of the movies.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
With the Christmas special and then the Groot like shorts.
And then, I mean, they show up in a lot.
And everything.
I think sometimes it's really short, like the last Thor movie, but then in Endgame, that first Endgame movie was practically a Guardians movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were all over that.
Yep. And I always say that when Guardians hit, that changed the tone of the MCU.
Big time.
Yeah.
Because everything started being like, oh, this can be really funny. And then we saw when you don't have James Gunn writing it, it doesn't always work.
Right.
But they definitely shifted in tone. And then you got Thor Ragnarok and everything became this comedic.
It's got a little bit of a...
Everything has the jokes, right? Yes. And then that's when DC was the no jokes. And it was just like...
And now look who's running DC.
Yeah, now...
The guy who's like, hey, I'll throw some jokes
in
there. Oh my gosh,
they need to have either James Gunn or Ben Affleck. And not that he'll probably ever be involved. He needs to have a thing that says like jokes.
Right. This franchise, the fact that I think the Captain America franchise is my favorite. This is a very close second. The fact that they have been able to turn in, I rewatched everything. Two is the one that's like the weird kind of, I can't figure it out, right? Because the characters aren't exactly right. And Chris Pratt is trying to do something with Star-Lord in that movie. Where I feel like he figured it out in the first one and he was like, I don't want to be this guy anymore. Yeah. So he tries to fix it in the second one, but he figured it out in this one. Like that, this mature Star-Lord in this, I was like, oh, where has this been?
I like all of them, but I think two's my favorite.
That's so strange. It's not strange, but I mean, like, I think it's my least favorite.
I love two. I think the story in two, I think the heart, because the whole thing revolves around the family that you make as opposed to the family you're born into.
Yeah.
And you have him and going against Ego, who's his real dad, but then obviously he's horrible. And then you have your Guardians family and all that. And just the stuff, like the way that it splits up. And then you have Rocket and Groot and you have him and all that stuff. I just love that. And then Yondu, obviously,
sure.
Where it's like Yondu is the adoptive father, but he's the real, well, he's his daddy, right?
It's like Mary Poppins, y'all.
And so I love that story. So I think two's my favorite. And then the first, I think this is third, but like third place with a, you know, 9.1 as opposed to a 9.3 and a 9.3.
I like this movie a lot, but it's so different in tone.
Very much so.
From the first two. I think the first one's probably my favorite,
but
the second is a close second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like the second, coming off of the first, which was so good, the second was like, this is just as good, if not even a little better, in my opinion, just because of the story that he wrote for it. But, you know, and this one is very
solid.
Whereas
the second Thor was just Asgard.
Yeah. It was, oh man, that dark world.
Yeah, but look at like, but look there. At that. I mean, I know it's not a trilogy anymore, but like when you look at that trilogy as a whole, it's like, yeah, you're right. Captain America is really the one that
I don't know. I can't figure out where all the hate for Spider-Man came from recently.
There's like backlash because it's one of the highest grossing movies of all
time. I think that's another one like that. I don't know
what you can hate about those movies.
They're great. They've been great.
But I never liked the second one. I mean, I was on the record.
What was the second one? The Mysterio one?
Yeah, because of that stupid exposition, the bar scene. That's my dance scene.
Yeah, I mean,
there
are some clunky moments of that, I will grant you. But like, I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But third one's awesome.
The third one is great.
Third one's amazing.
Well,
no,
and like, and that movie did Multiverse better than Multiverse of Madness. Remember, like, and that was our main complaint was Multiverse of Madness. I really enjoyed, but it's like we were promised this Multiverse
of
Madness.
Well, they kept it small.
But then they only like went through the multiverse like okay, now we're in two or three.
Right.
And so it wasn't as crazy where No Way Home kind of pulled in people that got bigger reactions and you're pulling in movie franchises.
When you bring in Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield,
right.
It is crazy.
That feels a lot bigger than just going to like, oh, here's this other alternate whatever, and then like,
I think Multiverse of Madness, I agree with you, is like I felt like, okay, this is going to be a big we're going to bounce around, but it felt like a very small contained movie,
right?
And then we do get those fun cameos, but
it's still really enjoyable. But I think what was promised, I think that you're set up for this huge adventure.
I think it's because the cameos in that movie feel kind of removed from the storyline.
In Multiverse of Madness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like they go over there and this thing happens and then they come back and the story picks back up.
That's true.
Whereas in Spider-Man, like, that is driving the plot of the film.
The three of them, right.
The three of them.
Yeah,
and so it's not just a cute little fan service moment. I mean, it is fan service, but it also works as non-fan service. Like, if those other two franchises didn't exist...
Yeah.
and they just cast those two actors to play Spider-Man from other, that movie would still work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The nostalgia button helps.
Absolutely.
But
part of what makes it like one of the highest grossing movies of all time is because they hit the nostalgia button and it worked.
Yeah.
Right. Like it works as a story as a whole. But then that nostalgia is just extra.
A little icing.
Icing on extra, the cake.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this one, man, like I said, I feel like, what are we in, phase five? Is that where we're at?
I have no idea anymore.
Whatever the current phase we're in,
sure.
Has been
four, but maybe
has
five
been floundering.
Just started.
It hasn't, you know, there's been
just
some
not
struggles.
An overarching storyline like we're
you're
used to.
You're not leading to something.
Well, yeah.
What whiplash coming off of Ant-Man, Quantumania to this, where you're like, this is a Marvel movie. This is what I expect the caliber of. Look at the difference in the fight scenes and the action scenes.
Yeah.
Ant-Man, Quantumania was just like, boop, boop, blaster, like just generic action. This movie, look at what happens.
This looks better than anything Marvel has done in a long time.
This looks great, and the CG looks great, too, because this movie revolves around a lot of animals.
Yeah.
And while, of course, you know they're not real, like you know they're CG, but they blend
in. It's because they're talking.
Oh, you mean the four in the cages.
Like the real animals.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know they're not
okay.
animals, but when you see the baby raccoons and stuff, like they blend in. Like your brain doesn't go, oh, that's just bad CG. It's like really, really good CG.
That's why I call him Ed Norton. Give me that movie. Give me that multiverse movie with Eric Bana, Ed Norton show up to help.
All the Hulks.
Yeah.
Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno. Oh my, yes, please. But what's his name's head?
But they really
couldn't
do that because in this universe, Ed Norton isn't a different Hulk because they recast it.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, if he showed up, that would be weird.
You'd be like, wait a
because
minute.
Because Mark Ruffalo is still supposed to be that guy.
That Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
That's true. It's the Mark Ruffalo head thing.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, how did that get through?
Right.
Like, how do you not tweak it a bit to look normal?
He looks like a giraffe.
But this movie is so CG heavy. But here's the thing, right? So James Gunn is a practical guy.
He does as much practical.
He gets his stars on wires. He throws them around and stuff. And then CG to touch things up.
Right.
So he relies on as little CG as possible. But it's an effects-heavy film for
Big sets, but you don't know it. Yeah.
Quantumania looked like, remember when they're flying through the air and falling and it just looks like a bunch of nothing. That's what took me out of it is Quantumania has so much of that where they should have sent him to the quantum realm and just filmed it. Tom Cruise going to space. Send those guys to the quantum realm.
I know it exists.
I don't think it's too much to ask.
Right? But that's the disconnect there. So like you see this movie right after that and you're like, wow.
Well, I don't remember. I really loved Black Panther 2.
That was really, it was solid.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then obviously No Way Home, right? Far From Home.
I can't, dude.
Homecoming?
You ask almost every episode what order and what, I don't keep
Homecoming,
track of stuff like that.
Far From Home, No Way Home.
You say, see this movie, I see it.
Yeah,
I'm one of those guys who's like, the fifth one was this and the second thing.
But so we deal with the Fast and Furious movies.
Dude, we're
luckily,
yeah.
Luckily those just have numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you just wait. Phase two of the Fast Saga.
I just listened to How Did This Get Made and they did an episode on Torque. Which is produced by
Peter?
He made that joke. So
it's a motorcycle movie.
It is, but it's produced by the Fast and Furious guys.
Oh, yeah,
and they're like, why hasn't they bring everybody else in? Why haven't the Torque guy showed up yet? But yeah, like this flick, it does. I agree. It feels like it's a return to Marvel.
Yeah,
and
this here's something that I haven't felt in the Marvel movie probably since Endgame. I felt like the stakes were real.
Yes.
Like, you know, like when I'm watching Ant-Man Quantumania, and I enjoyed that movie for what it was.
Yeah.
I'm not a hater, but it was fine. But at no point was I like, is Ant-Man going to die?
Right.
Is Wasp going to die?
They might kill off Wasp.
Yeah.
Well, James Gunn kills people off.
Yeah.
And he says when he kills them off, he intends them to be dead. He wants stakes in his movies.
Right.
Well, he can't really bring Yondu back.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge thing because they could have kept Yondu. He could have been around forever, you know? Because, Michael Rooker's not demanding Chris Evans' salary or Robert Downey Jr.
He'd be an easy guy to bring in, low cost.
Yeah.
And be like, oh,
you know Yondu?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, no, he killed him off. But man, because that's one of the reasons I love Guardians 2. And I mean, I love Yondu and Rooker's performance and everything. But those stakes and that scene where he sacrifices himself for Peter and says, you know, I may not have been your father, but
I was your daddy.
Yeah. That is like that's a tear up moment, right? And he produces those. I mean, in this one, were you tearing up at the theater again this week? I mean, there were three or four moments in this movie.
I was all right probably until about 45
those
minutes
animal
left.
Scenes when they're doing the testing on that them.
Doesn't bother me. You know, normally when people are like, he's like, no, I love my Revlon. Normally when people are like on these superhero movies, they're like, I don't know if you should bring little kids to this. I'm just like, well, maybe your kids are. But in this one, this like is... when I reviewed on the radio, I was like, I don't think you should bring little kids to this one. Yeah. Like, I think. Like 13 and up, I think are probably fine unless sure. it's a particularly sensitive 13-year-old. But like 10 to 13, I'd be like, well, I think I'd judge that on a kid by kid basis.
Yeah.
But under 10,
no. They're, like, you know, I mean, those cute animals you like, they're gonna murder them.
They're going to murder them, and one by one, like it won't even be like one moment and they're all dead. It's like they're going to kill one. They're gonna let that sink in. And then once you've kind of processed that, they're going to kill another one.
You know, that cute little bunny rabbit?
And then they're Duncan for sale attached. At the concession stand.
But so, and to, like the way he handles it, for people that haven't seen it, who maybe haven't seen it yet, or that may very well be a trigger warning for people not to see
it
the
is,
movie.
There is some animal violence.
But the way that he handles it, it's not gratuitous. They're not blasting animals into pieces. It's done for dramatic effect, and it furthers Rocket's motivation in a way that carries through to the end of the movie where he, spoilers, saves a bunch of animals. Well, like, it has meaning.
Actually, funny about that is when you go back and watch... So I watched this first, and then I went back and watched 1 and 2. It adds even more depth to Rocket's character once you see what he's gone through.
Yeah.
And then, like, that scene in the bar in the first one where he's like, he called me a varmint. Yeah. I didn't want to get ripped apart and put back together. And then when you watch 3, you're like, I'm going to watch Rocket get ripped apart and put back together.
Yeah. I think he planted enough things
to where he had... the beats of 3 ready to go?
I don't necessarily think he had the whole thing, but I bet you...
What is Rocket's origin story in the comic?
That's a great question.
Because my question is, like, is this just part of Rocket's origin story, and he had lines, and he realized, oh, I can build on that, or is this something he crafted for Rocket? Because I've never read a Guardians comic.
Well, okay. I will always highly recommend the Abnett and Lanning run, like that, which is this team, right? Like,
okay.
This team... was Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. They debuted, I think, in Annihilation number 6, and then they get their own series after that, and it's fantastic. Like, it's all of these characters that everything... James Gunn did an amazing job of capturing the tone of that comic.
Gotcha.
And putting it into
film. Wasn't
this
the second Guardians?
So the first team is like...
That's the Sylvester Stallone crew, right?
Yes.
That's the Ravagers.
Correct.
Yeah. They were the original Guardians. And then...
It's like there the was Justice Society version.
Yeah, right. And then they redid it. Because they had, you know... The fun part about Marvel Comics that I've always found is... On Earth, you're going to have... You know, you're going to have your Secret Invasion. You're going to have your Civil War. You're going to have all that. When you get to the cosmic stuff... they're not tied to anything. So you can, like, those guys, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning had free reign to do whatever they wanted.
They weren't really affecting other stories.
They weren't affecting anything. Like, you didn't have to tie into Civil War. You could just tell stories. And so they did, like, Nova, which I'm just like, come on. Like, James, just, can you bring Rich Ryder back, please?
Yeah, no. That's a lot to set up, especially if he's not going to be around, you know?
Whatever.
What I like about this movie is that he wasn't setting anything up for, like... I mean, I'm not saying these characters won't show up to fight in Secret Wars, but what I'm saying is that it wasn't like, here's an Easter egg, remember this in Ant-Man, remember this in Thor, remember...
Or here's setting up the next movie.
Right. Well, this movie was closing his trilogy. It wasn't setting
like
up
the most definitive end of an MCU franchise that I've seen so far.
But and he deserves it. James Gunn deserves it with everything he's done for the MCU and how good those movies are.
Yeah.
And then being fired and coming back and, you know, leaving to do the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, but then still coming back to finish this and all that. Like, they went through a lot, and he's done a lot for the MCU, and I'm glad they gave him the ability to, you know, write and direct this the way he wanted.
Was that pre-COVID? Did that happen pre-COVID when all that went down?
Yeah, I think so.
Man, that's crazy that was 3 years ago.
Yeah, because Peacemaker filmed during COVID. So.
Oh, sure. And but that, I mean, like, just remember that when they're just like, they found old tweets of James Gunn's and they fired him. And
it was
then,
all political because, like, he had apologized, though, for those years and years back. Yeah. And they got drug up because he started talking bad about the right.
And then they, you know, he got fired. And then DC's like, we'll take him.
I'm glad he came back. I wouldn't have seen this if he didn't come back.
Yes, you would have. Because we had to do it for the podcast.
I wouldn't have seen it. I do the podcast, but I hold strong.
You're going to do the blind man synopsis on Guardians 3.
I would have came and talked, but I don't want to see someone else finish James Gunn's
vision.
Like,
they bring in Brett Ratner.
Because this movie wouldn't have been the same movie.
No.
Sure it wouldn't have been. I've always been wanted to know like what the Toy Story 3 would have been. Because they had a Toy Story 3 script before Disney acquired Pixar.
Oh.
Because they were gonna lose Pixar.
Like, yeah,
there was
a
moment where Pixar was gonna spin off. And so the way the deal was worked is that Disney owned all the characters that they had created under Pixar.
The Toy Story characters.
All the Pixar characters.
Oh.
That they had created under, that Pixar had created under, while Disney owned those characters, okay. Right? And so, and that's why that the last movie scheduled to be under that agreement was they brought God, who was the head of the movie?
It was still, what's his name?
Yeah,
it was still, the other guy.
Yeah, Eisner? Was it still Eisner?
Yes, it was Eisner.
And
it was the other guy. Who's the other guy that like revitalized Disney Animation? They got in trouble with the guy that loved trains. He got in like
not big, Eisner.
No,
Lasseter?
Lasseter.
But Lasseter was in charge of Pixar.
Yeah, he was Pixar.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But this
okay.
would have been Iger still.
I don't think it was.
No?
I think it was Eisner.
I think it might have been.
Isn't that long?
Right before the switchover. And so whoever was in charge, they brought it to him and they were like, they pitched him two movies that they were working on. And they were like, this would be the last Pixar thing. And they were like, you can have Ratatouille, what would become Ratatouille, or you could have Cars.
Duh.
And he was like, well, I'm going to sell a lot more toy cars than I'm going to sell toy rats. And genius, so, yeah. And I think they had offered him Toy Story 3, and he was like, no, because I want you to create new characters that we'll own. And so he was like, so yes, I'll take the Cars.
Smart.
Yeah. And then they ended up buying Pixar. But there was a whole Toy Story 3 written that they completely scrapped when they acquired Pixar.
Well, I think Guardians 3 was written. I think he had it done, but then they fired him. So like the script was there, but I don't know about that. No?
I mean, I think he had an idea for it, but I don't know, because I remember when I was following it that he was like showing the script once he came back and wrote. Because he was working on writing the script for The Suicide Squad and Peacemaker and all this stuff, and I'm pretty sure once he came back, then he started tweeting about him, the pages of Guardians 3.
Okay.
I mean, I have no doubt he knew kind of where he wanted it to go.
Yeah.
But I don't think he had it finished and turned in. And I don't think they had anything of his to use that he would have, that they already paid him for. Like, there was nothing without James Gunn.
Yeah.
They would have had to then create their story. And again, it's like, but then it wouldn't have been really the trajectory, right?
It would have been very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody could have captured the emotion and the humor that he was able to pull. And I also think that
every time you hear people talk about these movies, it's the heart.
Yeah.
Well, because I feel like a lot of times when Guardians pop up in other movies, I can be like James Gunn didn't write this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's that every character in this movie, especially Gamora, right? Like this is a different Gamora. This is not
literally.
But I don't remember when did she jump to the timeline? I know what happens in Endgame, but like at what point do they bring her into the main timeline? Because she's fighting.
Well, because Thanos and Nebula and Gamora come back once the Thanos dies at the beginning of Endgame.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Thanos from the different timeline ends up jumping in with Gamora.
He brings Gamora with him.
And she's bad because he's like, oh my God, Gamora, because our Thanos killed her in the last one.
Right.
And then.
Spoilers for Infinity War.
Yeah, and then she comes back and it's like.
Spoilers for the highest grossing film of all time.
So.
Hopefully we didn't get out in front of you on that.
Yeah, so.
No, I don't think that she is, because she's fighting alongside. Because remember, she's fighting at the end battle with them. She's fighting with them. And then she has that interaction.
They don't like Thanos. The daughters don't like Thanos.
Well, they killed Nebula. Which also, as far as I know, in time travel, if you kill a past version of yourself, you erase the other version of yourself.
But they're from different timelines.
Yeah, but it's the Nebula that, because Nebula kills herself. The bad Nebula in Endgame is going to take the gauntlet from Clint,
mm-hmm.
and then the good Nebula shows up.
Yeah.
And shoots her in the chest. So the Nebula from Guardians 1 is dead.
Yeah, but I'd have to think about it, but I'm pretty sure there's some time travel. And again, I mean, it's time travel, so you can do whatever. But right. I think there's some in-world explanation to where one is already branched off, or it's a different multiverse.
Well,
or something.
They do play with that, where it's like, this is a, you know, here's the timeline,
so,
and here's this event.
It's not the kill the younger self and then everyone forward dies. It's like, this is just it's a different line. But anyway, but going back to the Gamora stuff and all that, it's like another thing that I'm really happy they did, because I think another director would probably come in and be like, how can we get Gamora and Peter back together? Because people want a happy ending. And it's
right.
like James Gunn has this more realistic thing, because no matter to Peter, you know, Peter only knows his Gamora. And so he sees Gamora, and of course he's in love with her and wants to be with her and all that.
Yeah.
And that is heartbreaking for Peter, but that's why it touches you, because it's heartbreaking.
Sure.
For them to just take another Gamora and all of a sudden say that one is going to instantly fall in love with someone.
Right. Just plug her in.
It's like she's not the same person. She looks like her, but she's literally a different person who's never known him before. Like when she says, what's your name again? Like, I believe her. Like, this is just a guy. So it's not fair, and I think that'd be really untrue to just have her. Now, I mean, could it eventually happen?
I think they definitely
could it happen?
Say that it could happen.
And could they get together?
I thought they were going to put him with the sister there for a minute.
I think that's kind of hinted at too.
Yeah.
Right? You know, but so I like that, and you know, and I know that's jumping way ahead, but like for him to just put a bow on it and be like, oh, Star-Lord and Gamora. Like,
right.
That's not
for
true
the record.
Too.
It's Gamora and Rich Rider Nova. That's the way it should work in the comics. I'm just putting that out there. But yeah, this.
Or is it Gamora and Adam Warlock?
That is a big. I got to tell you, that is a. He is a huge. My biggest problem with this movie is Warlock, because
I've got thoughts on that too.
This is what I think. They know that Big Dave is out, mm-hmm. right? He's done. The Drax character is probably never coming back.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, he says he wants to do serious.
Unless
work.
They, which is fine.
Not that he didn't make a ton of money
that.
And enjoy this, but like, he doesn't want to be Drax forever.
Until they're like, hey, do you want to be Bane?
Well, I have. Well, yeah, maybe.
Or Lex,
you know what?
Or Lex Luthor.
You know what? Maybe there's a reason he's out.
Yeah,
Marvel.
I'm going to DC. I think
Bane. Why would he not be Bane? That's.
Right. But this is that Drax character type.
Yeah.
Is so popular that I feel like they took that character type and put it onto Warlock.
They gave the same archetype
it's the
for
same
Drax.
Thing. Yeah,
but James Gunn does that with a lot of his characters, though, and I know love it or hate it, some people hate it, but he makes these lovable goofballs. And
yes.
Yeah, Adam Warlock is doofy in this, but also they're not playing this as the Adam Warlock that badass that went to space and came back and did this and has been around. They made him like, oh, I was just born. He's
right.
a baby.
Yeah.
He was just born.
Which is where I was like, okay.
You know, so I think it's a different Adam Warlock. And again, you had to do so much in this movie. James Gunn had a lot to do. Don't introduce, like, the hero Adam Warlock, and now you have another right. one. Or he's the villain. Like, he had a minor part.
He did.
You got him, and now you set him up. But to spend more time and have him be this...
Well, I can get Warlock, but I can't get Nova.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We don't need there's too many, right? Think about Spider-Man 3 and everyone's like, there's too many characters. Like, look how masterfully we say like, oh, we don't want too many. Look at the freaking cast list of this thing.
It's
there's
pretty nuts.
25 characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But James Gunn does it seamlessly, right? Like,
yeah.
You never feel like, oh my God, there's so many. You're just like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of characters.
It does. You know, I think we kind of, with Shazam, where we were like, oh God, like,
well, that's true.
We love James Gunn, right? Like, I think everybody on this podcast is
sure.
a fan. And
yeah.
When Shazam came out, we were just like, Jesus, this is going to... No, it's not. It's going to be bad. And then I see this, and I was like, oh, maybe it won't. Maybe.
What do you...
Because he's doing Superman, right? Like,
yeah.
He's coming over to do Superman. We watched Shazam, and we're like, this is really bad, and we were still kind of on the fence about
yeah.
the whole DC change and everything that was going to happen. And then we're just, you get this
right.
movie that is created by him.
Well,
right?
if you need a reminder that James Gunn's talented,
yes.
I mean, if ever in doubt, sure, see this. And then you're like, oh yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Yeah.
He's the guy. But, and also with Superman, he said he's not going to make it zany. He's going to take it seriously.
I don't, so that also worries me a little bit, right?
Why
because
that?
I do think that Superman does need a little bit of levity, right? Like the only reason that I'm only
but you can have
James
levity
Gunn,
without being
yeah.
wacky.
Agreed.
Yeah,
he's
not
going to
James Gunn up the joint.
Yeah, it's not going to be so goofy. But
who's got me? You know, you've got me. Who's got you?
Yeah.
Is a funny line, in a tense situation, right? Like, that's the kind of humor that I was like, okay, that.
But if there's anyone that, I mean, can make a competent, good-looking film and have heart to it, that's the
and he is
that's
that,
what you need that, for Superman is the
that
heart.
Big blue Boy Scout is the heart and soul. So, yeah, that whole thing.
So I have no doubt. And you know, the only people I think that have doubt, serious doubt, is the people that are still talking about movies from 5 years ago that didn't get made. Like, yeah, let's move on. Like, it, you know, there's other things going on. Go watch fake Star Wars on Netflix. <You know?
laughs> So this one starts off, and Peter Quill has had a rough go.
Peter John Quill.
Yes, right.
After his grandpa.
Which also, do we see him? We see him in part two. No, first. I think there's a cameo of him in part two when Ego sets off the little grenades.
Oh, do they go back to? You see his dad in the second one, his real dad, James Gunn's dad. He's like one of the old people that before he passed away, him and his mom are on Earth and they're seeing the attack or whatever's going on.
No. Oh, you're right. But I think that the grandpa is because Ego set one in St. Charles, okay. I guess.
Yeah.
And we see him in like a
window. I didn't realize that, but I know he's in the first when he brings him to go see the mom at the hospital.
Yes, which is talk about a gut punch of a scene. And so he has lost his mother. He's killed his father. He took off from Earth. The woman he loved
is dead.
He got dusted. Yeah. Right? Like, he was gone for 5 years. So, like, he has had one of the craziest story arcs. So.
And I like that. I like that. I mean, he's human. He is a human after all. And he's going through some stuff.
He's going through some
stuff. They're at Nowhere, which is now the Guardians / Ravagers have
HQ.
Taken over.
Yeah.
Nowhere, which is awesome. It's this giant head of a celestial floating around as their starship. When they were piloting it on space, I'm like, they're just flying that thing around. That's so cool.
So, you know, in the Avengers comic right now, they use a frozen celestial as like Avengers base.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Although it was confusing where you would see Sean Gunn's character pilot it, and then all of a sudden he's in like the village area doing the thing, and then he's back piloting it again.
Yeah, I was like, how are
like,
you?
Like, I felt like there was like some weird editing going on there.
Well, I'm sure there's autopilot too, though. Like, they have a way to like just.
But also, it's just like, it seemed like he was getting back and forth pretty quickly.
Show me a teleporter or something. Yeah.
Well, he just hops on the arrow and whistles and he just flies.
That's another great one. That's another great little, you know, character arc for him. Which again, he's.
I don't know, to give Kraglin this 3-movie character arc. Like, I would have never thought of it.
But like, but they referenced that that's cool. Like, a deleted. That's the post-credit sequence of Guardians 2 is him stabbing Drax with the arrow.
I kept thinking when he hit Nebula is, I'm glad he hit Nebula.
Yeah.
When Star-Lord walked through the door first. Like, he literally, I mean, yeah, it's funny because it's Nebula, but good Lord, in the chest.
Right in the chest. So I appreciate that, like, and I think we have kind of, we said in the first Guardians that you're watching a movie star get made, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there is no doubt in anybody's mind after that first one, like, that dude's a made man. And I feel like he's had a rough go. Everything post the first Jurassic Park, whatever that one was, Jurassic World. Everything else after that, he has been trying to get away from this character.
Yeah, because he's doing like the Navy SEAL thing, and he wants to be taken more seriously, I think, which is fine.
That's totally fine. And I did not really like his character is very much in part two, and not that likable. After a rewatch, he's not as likable.
Really?
Yes, I think so. But I feel like in this one, he's figured it out. Like, he's able to walk that line again of being kind of the lovable loser.
Yeah.
But also, you're rooting for him the entire time. So I was like, if this is the Chris Pratt we get from here on out, okay. You know, maybe we don't agree on certain politics, but you know,
maybe. I mean, that's the other thing too. A lot of the bad will against Chris Pratt is like,
it's part of that. It was that church thing,
rumors and like people talking, because that thing's so confusing because he didn't go to the church that was doing the conversion therapy thing, but the guy that's the head of his church used to work for the church that was doing the conversion therapy thing. And I think if you think, well, if he was the head of that church, did he really change all his ways to come and found this new? It's like, it's confusing.
Well, maybe that's why he left that.
But you're right. So if you look at it, he never gave money to that church. That the whole reason people hate him is they said, oh, he goes to this church and gives them money, but it's not the same church. There was crossover in the leadership. And again, could be a bad or a good thing, but there's nothing solid showing that he has done anything like that. So he's hit all that hate came
I think the Anna Faris thing did not help. Like that
now
was
that
poor
is,
decision making.
You really can't
opening your mouth in the media.
Yeah, you really can't excuse that. He appeared to do and say some crappy things.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. So yeah, he took a hit for sure. And I think that when he shows up, like, he was so good in those funny roles.
Yeah.
I mean, he was hilarious on Parks and Rec. I loved him.
Oh, he's great.
Did you ever see, does it Take Me Home Tonight with Topher Grace? And Take Me Home Tonight is like this.
I'm not
familiar with it. So it's the movie that he met Anna Faris on.
Okay.
And it's Topher Grace. It's set in the 80s. And it's like, it's kind of like Dazed and Confused. It's like one, you know, the one night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the movie. I don't think I've seen it.
He's great in that.
Okay. He's got like two scenes in Moneyball that are great.
Oh, he's the first baseman.
That was his first serious role was in Moneyball.
Yeah. Tell him.
Remember when he used
to
pop up when he was the friend in Her or whatever? Like, remember when he just used to,
you know, he's the jerk friend in Wanted as well. He's the guy James McAvoy hits with the, with the keyboard.
Well, right, because he was the friend in Wanted. He was the friend in Her. He was like, and they're both like kind of tech. Weird. That's kind of weird. He's the same character, I think. But he used to pop up as just these side characters, which is so funny now. Because look at with everything that happened with James Gunn getting fired. All the cast wrote letters to Disney and publicly tweeted and gave their support to James Gunn. And I think, I mean, they realize, I mean, not only is he a close friend, but he made their careers.
Right.
Oh,
They all blew up after that.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not talented.
I mean, Bradley Cooper was going to be.
But there's a lot of talented people who don't blow up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, it's not just about that.
Exactly. We talk about who's
there's a lot of untalented people who blow up. Like, right? Like, it's, you know, like, there's a lot of luck.
His talk show
there.
Just got canceled, though, so.
Whose did?
Corden.
Untalented person.
That makes a lot of
Thank God.
Yeah.
It was losing $20 million a year. That's like that's they couldn't sell ads on it.
From the jump or like towards the end?
Oh, I don't know about from a while.
Because the longer he was on it, the more money they got to pay him. God, and then by the end, it was just...
And advertisers no one was watching
I mean, that's
it.
The problem with people structuring these shows about going viral, you know, creating these viral clips, is people just wait for the viral clips.
Right.
So well, you don't have the need to go watch the show.
It's so funny. I'll do a ding-ding real quick. People are freaking, you know, about ratings. Right, they're like AEW did a 1.4 or WWE Raw did a 2.2, and it's like in 1996 and 97 when WWE's pulling in a 7.8, it's because there's nothing else on TV.
Right.
I don't watch live TV anymore.
Yeah,
so like to me, ratings don't matter.
Well, they do. All. They have ratings now where they call it like +7, and so they gauge the initial viewing and then streaming and banked DVR viewing for within a 7-day window.
Okay. And okay,
so
that makes sense.
That I think that's typically what the ratings you're seeing.
Okay.
It's not even necessarily its initial airing. They give them like a 7-day window.
No. These.
Oh, these are like their overnight ratings?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it's like, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, nobody watches. It's pretty rare that somebody... Anyway, but I think, in this movie... This is a different Star-Lord, and I think this is the best version of Star-Lord, in my opinion. I think Chris Pratt gives a hell of a performance.
When he's, like, freaking out because he thinks Rocket is dead.
Oh, man,
I was,
like...
You know, and I was just like, I'm like, that's a hell of a performance over a stuffed animal.
Something that's not there.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's really
he's
good.
He's screaming.
It's heartbreaking. And only because we've gotten such good movies to know these characters.
Right.
If it was just some... random superhero, some random character from a comic book movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, okay, that sucks.
I also think that's where the real shift in comic book movies has come over the last 20 years, is that actors are willing to commit and give these kinds of performances. I think they felt self-conscious before. I think they felt like it would be a waste,
right?
Or that people would
nobody's gonna see this,
or people would make fun of them for giving such a serious, gut-wrenching performance.
Point.
Over a CGI raccoon.
Right.
Right. And that I think that that's been the greatest driver you've seen from the MCU, or the largest impact that we'll see long term, is that people are willing, actors are willing to give real performances. And even though they know this is a paycheck movie,
Wearing a suit.
Yeah. But that, like, people aren't going to point and laugh at me because I gave a real performance in one of these things.
Well, unless you're in Catwoman.
Yeah. But, you know,
it's a bad movie. That's true of any bad movie.
That's fair.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be a superhero movie.
That's just a straight up bad movie.
To be, you give a like this really committed performance in a bad movie.
Right.
People.
We did a podcast on that, didn't we? Like great performances in bad movies?
Did we do that? I think so. Well, yeah. At least, yeah.
Great scenes in bad movies.
Great scenes.
That's what we did. But when people look at that movie and it's like, to think that Halle Berry's not a good actor, it's like, you're ridiculous.
She's got an Oscar.
She's an Oscar-winning actor. Yeah. It's like, yeah, she's in a bad movie.
Yeah, but, and so does Cuba Gooding Jr.
But he gave a hell performance in that movie. Yeah, in that movie. It was no.
But that's how it can go the other way, right? Right? So if you're only in bad movies, you could have potential. But and James Gunn for Guardians 1, that script, you know, he hires talented people, and with his writing, look what happens. They all become megastars.
Was Pratt the first? He wasn't the first choice, was he? I think there was somebody else that maybe the studio wanted.
Yeah, I think there might have been
James Gunn
else.
Kind of went to bat for him and said, "This is the guy."
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you said, they're on nowhere.
Watch the holiday special, because all this is set up by the holiday
you
special.
You have to watch. This is the first time I remember thinking, oh, you need to watch all three of these. You got to watch the holiday special, because everything in this movie ties back
and
to something else.
And I'm not saying like you can't enjoy this movie without it, but you're going to be like, why is this happening?
Why are they talking about Kevin Bacon?
who is this talking dog? Like, she's in the holiday special. Like, there's a lot of stuff set up. It all takes place on nowhere and some on Earth. But like, you got to... If you really want to know the whole thing and how they all came to be there together, watch that. And it's a really fun.
It's great. And it's only like 45 minutes, I think. Yeah.
But it's got this is from Screen Rant. It's seven actors who almost played Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
So they have Krasinski.
Makes sense.
Joel Edgerton.
Mm. Oh, that would not have been.
I think that would have been a very different movie.
Yeah.
Zachary Levi.
I can see that one.
Zachary Levi is the one. Yeah. He was going to be the one before Chris Pratt.
Okay. That's the one. That one makes sense.
Aaron Paul, which made sense for about a 6-month window.
That's weird. Yeah.
No Need for Speed 2.
No Need for Speed 2, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that Krasinski's been around a bunch of these different characters.
Yeah.
And he just, you know.
Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, no. That would have been awful.
Yeah.
That would have been brutal.
I think Levi's the serious one. And that's probably why James Gunn is keeping him around and...
Well, hopefully he can fix that character.
Colin Huerton.
Who's that?
I have no idea. Oh, okay. Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I don't watch that.
Oh, I know. You know what? That's not bad.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Also could work.
Yeah.
Again, a different movie.
Yeah.
But it is funny to look at Krasinski, and he's been like, he was like the number two guy for Captain America. Yeah. He was the number two guy for Star-Lord. He's obviously been Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah. They're like, we got to give him something, even if it's just a cameo.
I love that where he's talking about how he was putting on the costume. He was putting on the Captain America costume. He's like, I had it up to like my thighs. I looked up.
Chris Evans walks in.
No, Chris Hemsworth walks by as Thor. And he was like, you know what? This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And like starts.
That's funny.
But yeah, so like the Guardians are, the galaxy is okay for the most part. And then they are attacked and Rocket is injured. And when they try to go save him with this med kit, they accidentally set off
a kill switch on the inside. Because he's been manufactured.
Correct. So now this whole movie is attacked by Adam Warlock, right.
And then
so this is what I mean, is you need to watch part two, because the Sovereign, who is Michelle Lindicke, the gal with the...
Oh, no, from Tenet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the leader of the Sovereign.
Elizabeth Debicki.
That's what it is. Thank you. We see Adam Warlock at the end of Guardians 2. We see the cocoon. And now we see Will Poulter as Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
And we do find
that
out.
That kid grew up, man.
Yeah, no joke. I do love that he's like We're the Millers. Like he's the kid in We're the Millers.
Right.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Crazy. Which is also
a
very funny
movie. Was he in Vacation or something? Maybe it's just We're the Millers.
No, he's in Vacation.
Is he in Vacation?
The Ed Helms Vacation one? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And this is where we find out, we get a lot of backstory on Rocket.
This is Rocket's movie.
It really is.
This is
for a character that's all lying on a table the entire time.
Well, the flashbacks. Yeah.
That's true.
If not, it'd be like you just sidelined Rocket for the whole movie.
But this whole movie is about Rocket. And the other characters find themselves and come to a good place. But
it kind of ends up making the whole trilogy about Rocket.
It does make the whole trilogy about Rocket.
And that's...
I mean, there's even that, the movie the even addresses it like you thought.
This is your story.
This is your story. It's been your story the whole time.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And James Gunn has talked in interviews and said stuff like that. Yeah, he thinks of these movies as Rocket's movies.
I can see that for a while.
I
mean, for sure.
But these are Rocket's movies and people may not have realized it. But I think with this one,
if you look at them as a singular thing, right? Mm-hmm. They're not Rocket's movies until this one. But when you watch them as a whole, you're like, oh, this is absolutely about him. But we find out that we're introduced to the High Evolutionary, which again, the fact that the High Evolutionary is in a Marvel movie is just insane
to me. Well, and that's the thing. So real quick though. So like Brad Hyen was like, what a waste of Adam Warlock. And I'm like, I get where you say that. And I know, Joe, you've got your complaints. But it's like, okay, Adam Warlock was supposed to play a huge part in Infinity War. They didn't use him. He wasn't around for that. So now you take this character out where his big thing is fighting Thanos. So what are you going to do with him? And the High Evolutionary created Adam Warlock in the comics.
Correct.
So you've taken things away. So it's like, at least we got an Adam Warlock and he set him up. But I don't expect this huge thing because it's like his big thing is already passed,
already done,
and he wasn't around for it. So you have to find a new thing for Adam Warlock to do.
Right.
And so he's setting him up.
Spoilers,
for it.
He's part of the Guardians now.
Yeah.
Like that's where it ends up. So this whole movie is basically a heist movie where our characters are going from point A to point B, trying to find information or try to get back to finding the code to kill the kill switch.
It's kind of funny that they have to find a part. Rocket's always trying to steal
I think that's on purpose.
And they're finding a part for Rocket, which is kind of funny.
And your team is kind of in shambles, right? You've got Drax, who is, I think this is the best version of Drax. They've gone back to kind of the version from part one, from Guardians 1, where he's kind of a goofball, but also a badass. Mantis, I think, is pretty on the level. But the crux of this thing is Nebula, Gamora, and Pete. Like those are your three characters that are Peter.
They're really struggling.
And Nebula, it's interesting to see that because Karen Gillan gives a hell of a performance every time we see her.
She's really good.
And she's fantastic.
Did you see her tweet about couples counseling?
No.
Oh, it's so funny. And she's like, when you forget you have couples counseling that day and you have to do your therapy in makeup.
No.
And she's got a screen grab of Zoom of like her and her husband and then the therapist, and she put a little thing over the therapist's face.
Sure.
But she's in full Nebula makeup couples therapy. Hilarious. I just thought
that
was great.
I appreciate the commitment to the relationship.
Yeah. Right? And also for normalizing couples therapy. That's not just because your marriage is in turmoil.
That's right. Like sometimes you just need a little extra
just
help.
General maintenance. That's okay too.
I think she's
a little
really
tune up.
Yeah.
She's really funny in real life. Like the stuff she says, like she seems like a really nice person, really funny.
I forgot she was in that mirror horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
She's the, remember that? Oculus?
Oculus.
Yeah. She's the sister in that. I can't believe she was in that.
That was solid.
That was really good. It's Mike Flanagan. That's
so
it was also a WWE film.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that is for sure. So Peter's a drunken mess, and we see him in the beginning, and he's passed out drunk.
Did you see the behind the scenes of what they were doing?
No.
So when Nebula's carrying Peter.
Oh, yeah, it's a 35-pound fake 35, body. Yeah.
It's a fake model that they have, like, breathing. Yeah. That they
did
have
you see the interview with James Gunn?
Where she was... But
and Chris Pratt
and trying to get him to Sly Stallone to say I'm gonna go take
no. So there's this interview I'll send you guys, but Chris Pratt is talking about how weird it was. He's like, James Gunn had this fake body of mine in his office, and he said people would come in the office and scream, and Chris Pratt could not stop laughing. He's like, and what? He's like, they would come in the office and scream, and he's like, oh, I thought you said you would let them come in it in the office and cream or something. And then James Gunn is just beside himself
That's
with laughter because he didn't think of that at all. You know, he's like, yeah, I just let everyone have a crack at old Star-Lord. It's such a funny freaking interview.
Who's really the good. Jackson Pollock painting now?
Yeah, that's right. What a great, still a great line. Anyway, such a great line. But yeah, so they're like, our characters are bouncing from nowhere to just other planets. They go, they end up on Counter-Earth, which is the Earth that the deal with the High Evolutionary is he's constantly trying to perfect life, which is why he created Adam Warlock, who was like the perfect being. But
before they go to Counter-Earth, they got the heist part is they have to go to the labs that I guess did the experiments or manufactured some of the technology.
Oh, you're right. That's you're where. Right.
So I mean, that the whole heist part of the movie is that our team goes and lands there. Rocket's in the ship, like while they're on their whole journeys, which you know opens them up to other issues that happen. But they have to sneak in, and this is like all James Gunn friends.
You've Very
got
much so.
Nathan Fillion. Yes. You've got his wife is in there. You have the gal Ratcatcher from Suicide Squad is the one they kidnap with the red face.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Danielle. I just can't remember her last name.
I don't understand the hate about putting his wife in this movie.
Or it's like his brother's been in all of his other movies. And no one complained. But now
she's like a bit. Like she's in the movie for five minutes.
Has anyone ever heard of Ron Howard?
Right.
If you're gonna get mad about James Gunn putting his wife in a movie, have you seen how many movies Clint Howard's been in?
Right.
And
right.
No knock on either of them, but it's like that's ridiculous. You know why? Because she's a woman, and people hate James Gunn.
Yeah,
it's
that's just, also fair.
It's the DC, not the DC. It's the Snyderverse people. Yes. causing crap. And
always.
It's like just
always.
Anything, any ammunition. That's the thing that's so frustrating. I don't care if you like those movies, love his movies. Yeah. I used to like Snyder movies. You know, like,
I think Dawn of the Dead's still a good movie.
Right. I used to like the Owls movie. Like,
I didn't watch it till like 2 years ago. I'd never seen it.
Oh, really? Oh.
And it was a blast.
Yeah. That's really good.
No, yeah. I mean, he's made good movies, but like the whole thing is like, that's great if you love those, not against you, but don't terrorize people. Like, enjoy your movies and enjoy them. Don't attack James Gunn.
Buy as many copies as... I'll tell you what. There's a bunch out there.
Yeah.
Because nobody's buying it.
But anyway, so they stop there, and there's some funny moments. Like, Mantis throws all their suits out of a pod to be, you know, race in space. And like, how are we going to get home? And then they're trying to break in, and they split up, and Nathan Fillion's chasing him down. And also, so this whole spaceport is organic.
Yes.
Which is just crazy. Yeah. This is the trauma James Gunn roots right here.
This is James Gunn being like, watch what I'm going to put in this movie.
He made a spaceport organic. Yeah. And it's goop. Every control they do, they're going into a goopy like control
panel.
Didn't
they do that? They did that in Ant-Man, though, right? Remember when they would fly
the
things?
Well, to fly, with Hank, and he does that. You're right. But so, like, everything's organic, and there's, like, pieces of it floating around. It's really weird looking. And the fact that James Gunn can get away with this.
And it works.
But this is how you know that no one told James Gunn no on anything.
Yeah.
The fact that this was in this movie.
This is his bow, not afraid.
I'm surprised this got a PG-13.
I agree with you.
And honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that almost everything in this movie is an alien,
right,
it would have gotten hard R, because
that's how you get away with it. You kill aliens.
And there is a lot of violence in this movie. And it's almost all against aliens, but it's graphic violence. I mean, it's people losing arms, getting decapitated. Like, if these weren't alien life forms,
these were human beings on Earth.
Yeah.
This is not getting a PG-13. Now,
and there's lots of their blood. It's just not red.
Right.
Because they're
black or green.
Because they're aliens, right? But it's like, this is a very dark, violent movie. Which is why I started with, like, I don't know that you should bring a little kid to this.
No, I don't disagree with you.
You get your first Marvel F-bomb.
Which added nothing.
Right.
In my opinion.
Know. Oh, I thought it was a good... Honestly, when he said it, I was like, oh.
But it's like, what end?
Yeah, why is he so angry? You know?
Yeah, who else would get it?
I don't know that
Robert Downey needed it.
Tony Stark improvised
it, and they just ran with it. It wasn't even supposed to be in the
movie. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even trying to be a prude about things, but it's like... I just like
put it didn't pop for me like I think they wanted it to. Yeah. Right? He said it, and I was just like, "Oh, he's angry, jeez." You know, like it didn't. I wasn't like, "Oh my god."
Yeah,
you
I would have given. If you're gonna give one, I would have given it to Rocket when he's really upset about what has happened to him.
That's fair.
Like, I feel like that's where it should have lived.
I see. Chris Pratt wrote that line. James Gunn didn't.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I mean, I thought I thought it was a funny line because it is like
thought he loved Jesus potty mouth.
Yeah, but. Trying to watch him just, you know, walk Gamora, try to, like, open the door, I was like, oh,
yeah,
this is hilarious.
Because I did like that scene, though, because as he's driving
Nebula.
It was Nebula? Okay.
Yeah, but I was thinking the whole time, I was like, well, how does he know how to drive a car?
And he doesn't.
And then he doesn't. Yeah, and I was like, okay, because he's like, I left Earth when I was 8.
Yeah. And those are the little things where a lesser writer, like, I know that we're building up James Gunn here, because he deserves it. He's a great writer. But other movies... He gets in a car and he just drives.
They would have just been like, if he can drive a spaceship, he can figure out a car. Right? And I'm like, I don't think that's true. Like, they operate on very different principles, but one would assume.
Those are the differences. The attention to small details. Yeah. One little scene where he hops in a car and has to go to another place. One thing that could be a total throwaway. And James Gunn writes that in because he thinks about it. He goes, this guy can't drive. And, you know,
no idea.
So that adds up over the course of a whole movie. And you get very well written with fleshed out characters.
Right.
But okay. So anyway, so in the spaceport, they do a big battle. He like tries to woo this
the girl. This, he tries to like a
because they're trying to get Rocket's the password to unlock the kill switch on his heart.
Right.
So anyway, so he ends up kind of tricking her, and then a big battle ensues. They all fight. To their credit, Star-Lord and the Guardians are trying not to kill people. He's incapacitating them.
He keeps telling Gamora, he's like, we're not killing anybody. Yeah. Like, we're just going to knock them down.
So they're trying to, because the Guardians are good guys now, right? They started off as this rogue group of scallywags, but they're heroes now, right? They're Avengers, basically.
They are Avengers.
Right? So they're, you know, so they're good guys, and you can't have good guys going around murdering. It just, no. You know. So
until
they're
the last needle drop of this movie.
Well, there's, they kind of, that goes away because, you know, there's some stakes there. But so they're incapacitating people. They're really trying to just incapacitate them or whatever. We find out that the thing they end up getting is not what they need.
It's been deleted,
the code they need.
It is what they needed, but the code that to kill the kill switch was deleted
like a day earlier, and it was downloaded by one of the scientists, the high evolutionary.
Yes,
it's yep. his two. He has like two henchmen, two scientists,
right?
And one of them had downloaded it. I like that picture, Drew. I thought that was hilarious.
And then I was like, "Hey, that's really good."
When they land, so then they land on Counter Earth.
Yes.
And we find out that Counter Earth looks just like Earth, except for there's a like instead of the Statue of Liberty, you have the High Evolutionary.
It's the High Evolutionary with a
monkey.
With a monkey.
And so his whole thing is he is trying to build the perfect species, and we see in a series of flashbacks that Rocket was like an earlier prototype of what you could do with animals, but Rocket was the only one that really excelled.
Well, what they couldn't figure out is they would get them to a certain point and then they would just like loot. Yeah. Anger would take over
the
right?
next stage from Rocket. But right. like in Rocket's stage, each one of them maybe brought a little bit of something, and Rocket's was his intellect.
Brain. Yeah.
He was able to figure things out, but that wasn't the end goal, right? So then no. the next step is these creatures.
So where's the accent coming from?
the New York accent? Yeah. That's a great question.
It's a raccoon from Brooklyn.
Yeah. I guess I could say that, right? But no, because I think he's creating the raccoons.
No.
I think the High Evolutionary is creating them.
No. He got them because in the last scene, it showed where he came from, and it says that he was from some shelter in a place.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I definitely... All I saw
he was taking them from Earth.
I saw the raccoon part, which is a great...
Yeah, I just thought he was making them from whole cloth, too.
That's what
I
thought.
No, okay. no. Because that's the little thing where you find out he's a raccoon. It showed on one of the lines they came from a shelter.
Well, okay. I thought he was making raccoons, but But I thought he was making them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
just cloning raccoon after
Yeah.
Raccoon.
Like it's, you know.
Yeah. So they end up going to Counter Earth. And this is where we meet the Animen, which is just, again, just
it's crazy.
What is happening? And the High Evolutionary realizes that Star-Lord kind of says, you make this perfect society. Well, you've got an elephant man out here dealing meth. You've got a giraffe guy over here beating. He's like, you know what? You're right.
I think he's an octopus head of selling drugs to a cockroach
guy. Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And the High Evolutionary is like, you know what? Yep. You're absolutely right. Blow
That's
it up.
That's why we're torching this place.
And he blows up a planet.
Oh my gosh, and killing
everyone. It kills everyone.
And meanwhile, so Gamora hung back on the spaceship. The whole thing was after the heist. She's like, let me out of here. And they're like, we don't have time. We got to get this code because Rocket's about to die. And they basically kind of like kidnap her because they can't go drop her off at wherever at the Ravagers. And so she's on the ship. But what she does, which screws them over,
calls the Sovereign?
She sends out a tracking. Yeah, because she calls the Ravagers. But
that's right.
To them first. And Alicia picks up.
That's
and
right.
And then like, yeah, we'll
now,
be right there.
Now here come the Sovereign as well.
I wish she would have been like, I don't remember a British Ravager. That's weird. I thought when she answered the phone, I'm like, who am I talking to?
It is also, you know, we talk about how violent this is going back to part two.
Yeah.
When they murder all of the Ravagers by throwing them out of a spaceship. And I was like, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Like, holy.
Oh, man, that arrow scene is so cool.
Oh,
that
great.
Yondu scene when he's, and the arrow's going
it's
around.
So good. Yeah, so they end up getting the code, but at the same time, the High Evolutionary is leaving Counter Earth and the Earth is imploding. They get the code back to Rocket, but we think it's not working. And again, this movie's,
it's not going fast enough.
It's
right?
not going fast enough, or it's not taking. But at the same time, knowing that this is the end of this team, I was like,
yeah,
I haven't
thought. Been convinced that they were going to kill off a major character like this since Toy Story 3.
Sure.
Because like when they hold that moment as they're going in the incinerator, and I'm like, oh, Pixar's just crazy enough to do it.
There's two of them in this one.
There's the last one's even worse. Yeah.
For sure. Like I was just like, oh, James Gunn's crazy enough to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I absolutely thought. I'm like, I thought at the end, it's like, well, wow, Rocket's going to go into the light.
Oh,
like,
so then he got three
back
of
to his family.
Then there's three of them, right? So it's Rocket twice.
Oh,
I don't think
Rocket.
I did not think Rocket was coming back. Rocket's okay.
Oh, you thought they burned him up and he was just going to
die.
Well,
no, I thought he was going to die on the table.
Yeah.
And then when he's like, I'm okay. And then we go back to the ship and we find all the kids and.
Oh.
And then
yeah,
he goes,
I thought he was going to make a sacrifice.
He goes
there.
Back by himself
to
fight that. And I was like, well.
I thought that too.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
And then the Guardians, they win. They're trying to transfer all of these prisoners and kids. They've got like cages full of kids. They're trying
to
get
them. But they kill the High Evolutionary. I don't think we should.
I guess that's true.
Can't skip over the main thing.
One of the things that I love about that character design is when we see him in the flashbacks.
RoboCop.
It is very much RoboCop.
Yeah, it's great.
He's a normal, right?
Yeah.
And then Rocket, this is what we're talking about, murdering animals.
Kills all his friends, and then he goes ballistic and on the High Evolutionary.
Tears his face
and
up.
Yeah. You don't see it. It's like off, you know, camera or whatever. It's right. Rockets over his body, but he is scratching the crap out of his face. And then now in present day, he has RoboCop, the skin stretched over, and then we see it. Gamora peels his face off.
I thought it was going to... I didn't like the art design when they peeled his face off. I don't know how else you'd have it look, but I thought they were trying to tell us it was the Red Skull.
Oh, the design with the chopped off nose and everything.
Because it looked like the Red Skull to me.
Yeah, I thought they were going to get like a comic-accurate, maybe like robotic version of that face.
Yeah.
But I didn't even think about that.
But I mean, like, that's kind of how it is, though. Like, I guess if you peel off your skin and you have a skull.
For sure. Like, I don't know what else you do, but like...
especially
given that, I mean, it wouldn't be crazy for the Red Skull to want to make the perfect... race.
But then he'd have to come
except
off
for
of
he was white and
Volmir.
Yeah,
that'd be really weird.
Remember, because he's
Nazi. But it's like, but
no, because he's on that planet.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I was talking more to Kevin. Like he's Nazi, so he wouldn't probably recreate himself as a black man. But maybe that's what makes him evolutionary.
Maybe
right.
Maybe.
He's evolved.
We should say the High Evolutionary is played by Chukwudi Iwuji.
That dude is given a performance of a lifetime. He is on it.
He's in Peacemaker.
Yeah. He's the No, I won't spoil.
He's in Peacemaker. He's in Peacemaker. So he brought him over. Yeah. That's a villain, man.
That's
a comic book villain.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. So in these comic book movies, we get these big over-the-top chewing scenery. Not saying it never works, but kind of all the villains feel the same. They're just like, I'm this crazy villain over the top, and it's funny sometimes because I'm so villainous.
This dude is a straight-up villain.
Like, sometimes villains are just really bad dudes. You don't have to be these, like... You don't have to be a mad titan. You don't have to be this, I'm going to destroy the world. And then this guy has another one of those conflicting, like, I think what I'm doing is the right thing because I'm trying to make the perfect race or whatever. You know, like, he's a villain that's complex. He's not just, I'm destroying the world because...
I don't like Tony Stark.
Yeah, you know, so it's really interesting how it's like, obviously, he's a super bad dude with doing terrible experiments and things, but he thinks he's helping. And
but I think that's also the fun part about the cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
Is... It's limitless.
Yeah,
we haven't even seen a nihilist yet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Like, and see, that's what I don't like about the cosmic stuff is that I feel because that they can just come up with anything to get themselves out of a situation.
Sure,
like there's just
what's the ultimate nullifier?
Well, there's always another cosmic being. There's always another.
There's always another
celestial.
It's like Doctor Who and the sonic screwdriver.
There's always something,
but it's like. But at least they kind of like they don't go to that too terribly much.
That's
right?
True.
Where it's like I feel like in the cosmic stuff, there's just always another sonic screwdriver.
Here comes Galactus.
Right.
Here
there's comes, always, you know. Oh, we have to find like we've got Adam Warlock. And oh, well, now we have the Celestials. And now we have that. Like there's always just. Oh,
you
just,
know what we don't have, Kevin?
What's that?
Nova.
Yeah.
God dang it.
You're not going to. Not in this version.
I think we might. I think
someday they'll have
I was hoping. But. This is what I was hoping, honestly. So we know that Xandar was destroyed in Infinity War.
One of those, yeah.
So in the comics, at least, Richard Rider is the Green Lantern. Mm. And his helmet is the world... When Glenn Close was talking to the World Mind or whatever, his helmet is... He's the last of the Nova Corps, and his helmet is the World Mind. So I was hoping that at some point, you know, I don't know, we see a Nova helmet or something, but nope.
He's not Green Lantern, though.
Yeah, he is. He's a space cop.
Okay.
Nova's a space cop.
Okay. They haven't brought over DC yet.
Right. Nova Corps were cops. Yeah.
Right,
so,
right. No.
Yeah. Richard Rider was a space
cop. Okay. So they kill High Evolutionary. That moment where Groot, so they give Groot a bunch of guns because they can't have
that's
weapons.
That's a great scene.
And so, he's good. Like, you know what to do with these. And so then they're there and he knows the trap. Drax like, this is a trap. Everyone's
it's
like,
face it's face
and
off.
The whole movie, he says, it's not a trap.
I can't believe there wasn't a joke when...
Took his face off?
When they took his face off. Yeah. I know for sure. You'd be like, I told you it was a face off.
But so the whole thing is like, no, not a trap, face off. So they go to the thing and then the scientist that they were trying to get
the thing off his head.
Oh, you're so stupid. This is so clearly a trap. It's like, not a trap. But anyway, there's this huge showdown and Groot pulls out tons of guns.
Oh, man, it was so cool.
Them off, and another one of these like 360 Avengers-like, you know, with them shooting.
It's just him and Star-Lord.
And Star-Lord back-to-back. Yeah. And that was really cool.
It was dope.
And then the guy with the codes is like, don't kill me. And Star-Lord just jumps out the window with him. And then Groot falls down like wraps him up and grows wings and glides off. It's just very cool.
And I do like the, I think it was Gamora that was, or Nebula was like, your plane was jumping out of a window. He's like, oh, it worked at the time, you know? So yeah, so this planet is blowing up. They're trying to get all of these kids off of this ship. And in the process, Peter is the last one behind and he jumps. And we've seen this before, right? He does this in Guardians 1 when he saves Gamora, where he gives Gamora his mask and he starts to turn. But at that point, he was half celestial, so he could survive. Mm. In this one, I was like, oh,
I think somehow has some kind of a enhancement that like some kind of augment that lets him not die instantly. But I think the reason he survives, there is some in-universe explanation for why he can survive a little bit in space.
I was like, when his face starts to pop,
that's what I'm like.
I was like, if they blow up his head, like this is insane. Think
like a full Outlander.
Yes.
But I thought they were gonna.
But if anyone would,
it's him.
It's James. It's James Gunn on his last day of work.
Right, but I don't think they would. I don't think when it starts, to,
Kevin.
But when he starts to like pop, poof up,
I know. I was like, oh.
But the way that James Gunn cares for these characters and is building them, I don't think he would.
You think that's a step too far?
The body would not.
But I could also see a version of events where. If the goal was Chris Pratt wants to be done and put a period on this and that there's no ever coming back, not to reference last week's movie, but there's no ever coming back, like that would be a way to achieve certainly that.
Realize definitely not coming back from
but
that.
But until they just go find him in another whatever. I mean, you know, like there's always a way.
Well,
but
especially now they've introduced time travel.
Well, and multiverse.
And multiverse.
And that's why I think they left it open-ended. I don't think that he signed up for another movie. It may be him. It may be another Star-Lord, like another multiverse. Another variant of Star-Lord. The options are endless.
Well, I mean, that ending kind of sounds like they've left. Okay, so we think that Star-Lord's going to die. He doesn't die, right? They get him onto the ship. He survives. And the end of the movie is basically our team calling it a day. This original MCU original Guardians are all saying like, that's it. We're kind of done. So Pete, who has been having this crisis of faith sort of about leaving Earth. I think in the second movie, Gamora gives him a bunch of guff about not going back to Earth. And he says, I'm going to go back to Earth and figure this out. Mantis is like, I've been following everybody. You know, I followed Ego. I followed you guys. I just did whatever you guys told me to do. I'm going to go do my own thing. And then Drax is like, I'll go with you. And Nebula is like, I need you to stay with these kids because we are introduced to this version of Drax that we forgot about when he lost his daughter.
That's what's really cool. It's like his whole storyline is being motivated by he lost his daughter. And now he's on this war path. So it's like he has the chance to be a dad again.
Right.
To all these kids.
His daughter does come back in the comics as Moondragon. Mm. So putting that out there.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then...
Isn't she the one at the end? Is that...
So that's... No. That is... So she's Quasar. Like that character, Phyla, whatever her name is.
Oh, well, then need to bring in Kevin Brackett then. The villain from issue 4.
Right. But she, I mean, when I looked at her powers, like Quasar has the Nega bands.
Yeah.
And her powers were set like on her hands. I don't know.
I thought she was another character from the comics. But
she is.
Yeah. But you think that it's like a hybrid of.
No,
like,
I think that's. Could be Quasar.
Oh, okay.
But Moondragon's is a different character.
Yeah, okay, got it.
But also part of the Guardians at one point. Like, all of these characters are all Guardians at one point or another. And Peter tells Rocket, he's like, look, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Like, you were going to lead, you were leading this team. And then everybody kind of goes their separate ways. Gamora goes back with the Ravengers and kind of joins back up with them. But you do get that, it is funny how much chemistry Zoe Saldana and Chris Pratt still have, even when those characters are different, because you could feel it. And then I'm not, you know, whatever. But like in part one, it is electrifying. Those two together are electric. In part two, it's even more so because it becomes a Ross and Rachel thing, right? Where it's a will they, won't they? Yeah. And at the end, they do. And then we get him losing Gamora. Well,
Sam and Diane.
Fair enough. That's good. Yeah, right on. I guess because Ross and Rachel do end up making it.
Well, no, because he references Cheers.
Oh, he does. You're right.
And he
this
wouldn't.
This is not Cheers.
He wouldn't know Friends.
That's fair.
Because he left before debuted.
That's well done.
Yeah.
Well done. And then you see it again in this one. Like when they're leaving and going their separate ways, there's a moment between the two of them where it's like, oh, yeah. Like, but this because, could happen
because
later.
They had earned that at that point.
Yes. So right.
At the beginning of the movie, this isn't his Gamora. And while she still isn't his Gamora, they've just been on this trip. We didn't mention, she saved them. When she was back on the ship, and then the pig creature comes to abduct Rocket because the High Evolutionary is like...
Not Bebop and Rocksteady?
Right. When we first saw him, like, it's Bebop and Rocksteady. But that's voiced by what's-her-face from Ant-Man, who plays... Ant-Man's
Michelle
ex-wife.
Pfeiffer.
No, Ant-Man's
ex-wife. Oh, Judy
ex-wife.
Greer?
That's Judy Greer.
Who was?
The pig creature.
Are you serious? That's hilarious.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, that's so really random. Funny. But that's Laurie Strode's daughter.
Yeah, there you go. So she ends up like fighting to get Rocket and then piloting the ship. And you get that funny moment where she's like, what kind of controls are on this ship? And she almost like crashes into them after they get the code thing and get Rocket back. So she ends up saving them. And then they have that amazing, and we can't not say that 2 minute long tracking scene.
It's
and the whole, like,
when they decide, like, they have the opportunity to walk away. And the Guardians are back together.
And that scene had given me chills when they started walking
that
way.
When he hits you with the Beastie Boys, and they start walking to the hallway, and
Gamora's
turn around.
Okay. You know, she's just like...
Holy, like, I was like, cool. Oh, yeah, this is pretty dope.
And then you get, this tracking scene where the camera's just, like, going in and around, and everybody gets their little moment. You get Rocket back on Groot shooting things, and you get Drax with his knives.
Oh, yeah.
Tracking shot battle in comic book movies is like the cinematic equivalent of the splash page.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly what that
and
was.
Gamora's got her sword.
It was great.
And Groot is tearing through people. Star-Lord.
Like a two-page splash
page.
That's a good one. It's a Jim Lee splash page.
Star-Lord's just stunning people with his, you know, he's still trying not to kill people.
That's right.
And so that was a really great scene, and that's the difference, right? So James Gunn gives us these type of action sequences throughout the film where you're like, wow, I'll remember that moment.
It does kind of make me kind of excited for Superman. Because I don't think we've really gotten a good
visual representation
of what he can do.
Saw him crash through a Sears.
And killed a bunch of people.
Blew up an IHOP that one time. That was a good time.
Didn't bother to clear out the city buildings that he was crashing, throwing people there.
And another big moment, though, is that Rocket accepts he's a raccoon because he sees that sign.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they all get a moment to, like, kill the High Evolutionary. They're kind of passing back and forth. But Rocket Raccoon is like, because he's like calling him, like, I don't know, 24601 or whatever. And
my name's Rocket.
He's like, Rocket, raccoon. Blows him away. And then they all start like.
Right. It was pretty great. Yeah. It was good. So the post credit sequences is the new Guardians.
Is Rocket leading the Guardians?
It's Warlock and Phyla. I can't remember her last name, but I don't. And Nebula, and is that it? A Groot.
Groot.
Yeah.
Groot is King Groot now.
He is King Groot now, and he's
huge,
talking,
man.
Again.
But he's not. That's what's beautiful.
Was it Sean Gunn's character there too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, Craig. Yes.
No, that's the beautiful thing about this, and James Gunn confirmed it. So at the end of this movie,
he says, I love you guys.
Not Gamora can understand him. The whole movie, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, yeah,
she goes, I know your name. You don't have to just keep telling me. At the end of the movie, he says, I am Groot. And she goes, I know, whatever. So she's starting to accept him. We've been with these guys for 10 years. We can understand Groot now.
So he said, I am Groot.
He said, I am Groot. And this is the first time we understood him because we're a part of the family now.
I did notice
Which
that.
Was
I was like,
awesome.
I was wondering when that I forgot about that moment, but I'm thinking at the time, like, is that supposed to be he can talk now or we can understand him?
Which I think that's lost. I think a lot of people think, like, oh, we can just talk. He's finally big enough to talk, but it's like, no, we're finally accepted into the group to understand him.
That's
like,
pretty great.
Like Gamora was.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic.
She never, she didn't hear English. She heard I am Groot, but.
Right.
Because I liked the line where she was just like, seriously, like, are you guys understanding him or is just
making stuff up?
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny. But like, so you see where, again, the Gamora that's still not our Gamora is becoming, like, she might be one of our Gamoras. Like,
at some point,
she's understanding Groot and she's on better terms and she's been through this adventure with everyone. And so like, she's gonna do her own thing, but they keep it totally open to
And then we get I think one of the best post-credit sequences, not the one where they're sitting there, but when Peter walks up in St. Charles, which is where, you know, it's
where
a suburb of St. Louis.
I saw this movie in St. Charles. It's just weird.
And I think, so he walks up to the house, he knocks on the door, and of course a woman answers the door. And I was like, oh, dang, like, grandpa's dead, you know? And we get an embrace, and with Pete, you know, his grandpa, who hasn't seen him since he was 8 years old.
Knows exactly what he would look like as an adult.
You know what? That's a movie trope that I think that we didn't talk about on the trope episode. Yeah. But like when a child goes missing and they come back and the parent is like, hey.
But sometimes adults look just like they did as kids. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
They sometimes.
Look, Haley Joel Osment, if that left for 30 years and he came back, you tell me you wouldn't know that's Haley Joel Osment, dude. Like, I mean, the guy's great and he's very funny. But
I
dude,
love
he
that
looks,
we got Kevin to say,
yeah, that's great.
But like, some people look, I think even like Fred Savage to
Fred
an extent.
Savage, yeah.
Like,
Ben Savage.
Fred Savage,
they
yeah.
look
yeah.
like grown up. So like, I don't know. But it's a movie trope for it sure. Is, but yes. sometimes...
I'll let that one slide.
And especially in a movie where it's like...
I didn't need another 20 minutes of like him showing ID.
Yeah, yeah, right, right, right. He just accepts it.
That's what Tom wants, on. A four-hour cut of this. And it's yeah. all like, well, we're going to do 23 and me.
It's a four-hour cut. An hour of it is just them waiting for the 23
yeah,
and
correct. Yeah, yeah, right, right, right.
Which is quick. Damn, they're an hour now.
That's
yeah.
It's very fast. And then we get a little tag that the Guardians will return.
No.
Oh, no, no. It's the yes, you're right.
Star-Lord
the legendary Star-Lord will return.
Meaning whatever that means, right? Is he going to pop in Secret Wars? Is he going to have his own thing?
Who
is
knows?
Is it going to be a different Star-Lord? So,
yeah, I mean, he's had a few successful comic yeah. runs.
The legendary Star-Lord.
The legendary Star-Lord.
So.
But the last scene is it's the most domesticated we've seen anybody in the MCU, where he's sitting next to his grandpa and they're talking. He's like talking about mowing somebody's lawn. And he's like, I can't, you know, he's going to sit there. I'm not going to do it. He's going to sit there. The son's going to sit there on the porch and judge me.
Yeah.
He's like, don't even get me. You know, the grandpa's like, don't even get me started. And he's like, no, please do.
Yeah.
And the legendary Star-Lord will yeah. return. This feels the most definitively ending
yeah.
of any of these franchises, right? Steve Rogers can pop back up. They left that wide open
yeah.
for Steve Rogers. Iron Man, maybe. Can't really come back from what Tony Stark did. Obviously, Thor, Spider-Man, all of those characters
well,
have
the ability.
I think
the difference is you can always come back in comics. Always.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how
sure,
they
sure, sure.
But you don't have to. This feels like an ending.
This feels like right? the end of this Guardians. So,
but, you know, this is a movie that has a start, middle, and finish.
Yes.
And this trilogy is an arc. And it could end here. We could never see them again. If they do pop up somehow, that's great. But this can live on its own.
I think as long as James Gunn is working for the other guys, these folks are gone.
I think I see a version of events where Star-Lord pops up.
Maybe.
But I don't know that you get full Guardians movies.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a tough sell without James Gunn.
Big time.
I think also for the actors. So I think I don't know that Chris Pratt wants the pressure of it. So it's like popping up for a 20-minute yeah. run in yeah. a Thor movie, sure. But like carrying a whole Guardians yeah. reboot.
You want me to get in that shape again?
Well, not even just that. I just don't think I think this character and franchise is so important and crucial
sure.
that he doesn't... It's going to be a tough sell to get him to trust someone else to take it over.
I think it's the Chris Evans thing, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, if I come back, it better be for something...
Right.
You
yeah.
know, like...
Yeah. So I think he'll pop up. And I think Chris Evans is more driven by the emotional impact of that run.
Of that ending.
Where yeah. I feel like Chris Pratt is driven more by the fact of like these movies are such a unique vision of James Gunn. It's going to be tough to convince him that they can hand those reins over to someone else who
sure.
can replicate that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's the thing. I don't think you want someone to replicate that. You want someone to have a fresh take that still feels like this, but what you don't want is season four of Community.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Of and someone trying to impersonate the unique voice that created
it's
this.
It's a comic book thing, right?
Yeah.
Where Dan Abnett, Annie Lanning created this world, and then when they left the book, there was no Guardians book for a long time, and
yeah.
then the movie came out, they're like, Brian Michael Bendis is going to write Guardians of the
right.
Galaxy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, it's... But Daredevil's the same way. Kevin Smith and to Ed Brubaker to, you know,
yeah.
different guys who are... But do I want to see somebody else's take on the Guardians? Not particularly.
Yeah.
Well, we've
you
seen...
Know
what,
who, we... You know who... Phil... Lord and Miller.
Yeah.
Lord and Miller would be the only guys that I could yeah. think would...
And they kind of live in the Marvel. I mean, it's Sony, Spider-Man, yeah. but it's still Marvel. So, like, yeah.
Those are the guys that I wouldn't mind seeing.
Yeah, I could see that.
I want to see their Guardians. Star Wars, too.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. And I think, you know, comparing Star Wars to Marvel, I think that's the brilliance of Marvel, is that they've created this universe where you can tell different kinds of stories. And in Star Wars, you can't.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I might have liked that Star Wars movie that Lord Miller did that Ron Howard took over, mm-hmm. I don't think it would have felt like a Star Wars movie because Star Wars
oh, I see what you're
is
saying.
So baked into a certain type of tone
yeah.
Yeah.
where Marvel has more breadth. And so you can try different
yeah,
things.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want, yeah. honestly.
Did you guys see, though, that James Gunn didn't like the way that Star-Lord basically screwed everything up with Thanos. Like,
yeah, I did see that.
Like, he was not happy because, like, I wouldn't have had Star-Lord do that. He's not going to do a dumb move like that. He's like, he would have let Gamora die instead of sacrificing
the universe. He tried to kill her. He tries to kill her and he blows bubbles instead. Right. He's going to kill her with the collector, but Thanos changes the gun.
Yeah.
But that's very true.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find
us. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
Letterboxd.
Oh, yeah. Also on Letterboxd. Same name.
Not letter. I, you know what? I almost bought joybutts21.com because you said that's where your Letterboxd was.
Oh. Did somebody beat you to it?
No, I just didn't care. This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And you can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, do all the things. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Wilbur rescues the egg sack.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.